Hello, this is Lewis.
And this is Ian.
And welcome to 101 Films You Should Have Seen.
Probably.
This week coming from the kitchen.
I wonder if it gives a certain different effect.
It's a little bit echoey.
A little bit echoey. So we are, just to reassure our listeners, we are actually in a kitchen, not in a bath or something like that.
Yeah, Orient sex dungeon.
Thanks. Have you seen any films this week, Lewis?
I have.
Again. There's only been like 2 days since we recorded the last one.
I know.
We're stacking them up.
But yes, I saw God Bless America.
Well, I recommended that to you, didn't
you
I?
Did,
despite
yes.
the fact I've not seen it.
Despite the fact you've not seen it, you just thought I might like it. And I did like it. It was good.
Good. Well, I think I'm going to like it as well. I'll have to borrow that off you if I can.
Yes, it's the tale of a man who has had enough with reality TV and decides to go and kill everyone involved.
Yeah, kind of. All of our fantasy, really.
Pretty much. It's a liberal fantasy involving guns.
Excellent. yes, this week...
This week we're doing one of your recommendations, right?
We are indeed. We're actually doing Godzilla.
Godzilla! Godzilla!
The 1954 original, not the terrible 1998 American remake.
Yeah, that was awful. Bad.
Well, anyway. But we thought we'd do Godzilla. Now... Strangely enough, that I haven't actually seen the version of Godzilla that we watched today.
The Japanese version?
Yeah, because I've seen lots of different Godzilla films. Basically, when I was about... I think it might have been about when I was about 10, 9 or 10. Channel 4 just started to show all these old Godzilla films in the middle of the night.
Right.
So my dad would tape them and then I would watch them the next day. So I watched... Bizarre. I mean, they're just mad. All those Godzilla versus films. They're just insane. All sorts of crazy monsters.
Yeah.
And I think, well, I'm 99% certain that the original Godzilla I saw was probably the American edited version.
Yeah, it must have been. Yeah.
So this is the first time I've actually watched the full proper Japanese version. And obviously all those other ones are also dubbed as well. There's slightly comical kind of American voices.
Yeah, well, I think...
Hello, this is a scientist. that kind of voice. Why do they use that kind of same voice for the dubbing? It's always
weird,
that kind of weird, strange, semi-serious... Hi, yeah, okay then, I'll go over here.
That's the thing. It's weird trying to dub a Japanese speech just because they're putting so many extra little words.
Yeah.
There's a lot of Japanese, there's a lot of just sounds
that don't really mean
anything.
Hi!
Saw this now, you know, which just doesn't mean anything, really. They're putting all these kind of or oh.
It is quite amusing. But, yeah, so those films, although many of them are quite poor, they had a certain fascination for the sort of 10-year-old me. And I remember afterwards playing, I had those natural history models of the dinosaurs.
Yeah, I had those.
And I got a load from like Weetabix. Weetabix gave a big box of them away.
You had the same thing?
Yeah, great. So, yeah, and I created my own, you know, Tyrannosaurus Rex on loose and a Brontosaurus and things like that.
Did you kind of sellotape little kind of scales onto them or give them atomic breath or anything like that?
No, nothing like that. They were just dinosaurs. Okay. I found the atomic breath stuff a little bit silly.
It's a bit far-fetched,
isn't it?
This was
a serious idea about dinosaurs being on the loose in London.
Right. None of this atomic breath nonsense.
No, absolute nonsense. So the Godzilla films, I always had an affection for the character. And do you remember there was also a Godzilla TV
cartoon series?
Where, didn't they summon him blowing a whistle or
something like that?
So, yeah, something slightly ridiculous like that. And since then, I've just been very intrigued to see the original. I think it was early, I think 2004, they released for the first time the actual, in the Western market anyway, the unedited, proper Japanese version. So I thought, let's do that.
Yeah.
And we did.
We did, yeah. I mean, for me, I've not seen any of the Godzilla films, the Japanese ones, until today. I saw the American remake, which is awful. But I've lived in Japan, so I'm very familiar with Godzilla from over there. Cause it's,
you live through several attacks.
I lived through several attacks, yeah.
to go to the shelter.
When the Godzilla siren went off, I have to go down to the basement. But I mean, there's huge affection for Godzilla in Japan, as you probably expect. And you can still get all of the toys and everything, you know.
I'm sure, yeah. Well, yeah. It's their kind of post-war pop culture icon, that. And mm-hmm. who's the kind of... the man who flies around with the big yellow eyes.
Ultraman.
Ultraman.
Yeah.
The little mechanical boy, robot boy.
Atomic Boy.
Atomic Boy, yeah. So they've got, you know, sort of several big icons. And certainly Godzilla is definitely one of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
The premier one. The king of the monsters.
So the pitch for this?
The pitch. I would say best way to describe this film is a tale about the dangers of... nuclear testing told through the prism of prehistoric monsters.
The best way to tell that tale, really.
Exactly, it's the best way to get that message across.
Yeah. I mean, I was surprised actually watching the Japanese version. I think this version only became available in English with English subtitles very recently.
Yeah, yeah.
It was interesting to see how serious it was and how it really took on a lot of the nuclear message, you know. Like,
oh, yeah. It's
all about...
It's not a subtext at all.
No.
It is quite clearly about nuclear weapons and the effect of nuclear weapons and the danger of, like, the arms race and the Cold War.
Yeah.
There's no, oh, I suppose you could see the monster as a bit of that. It's, like, up front and centre.
Yeah.
Yeah. And especially, you know, this was made in 1954, Nagasaki and Hiroshima only 9 years beforehand.
Mm.
So that the after effects of that on the Japanese culture and society and psyche is, you know, really felt and quite clear in this film.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, a fascinating film in many ways, but also a very good film.
Yeah, I was surprised how good it was, actually.
Yeah.
Really, yeah. I enjoyed it immensely.
I mean, I did as well, to be honest. I kind of went into it, kind of preparing myself for, I suppose, this is going to be a little bit jokey, and we're going to watch this in a slightly ironic way. Oh, look at the funny man in the rubber suit.
Mm.
But it's obviously the effects have dated. You know, you're talking about a film that's over 60 years old, nearly 60 years old. So it's a little bit rough around the edges, a little bit stagey. But some of the direction is fantastic.
Mm.
And some of the images still have the power to really affect you.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think what works is its attention rather than on just having the monster, but on the effects of the monster.
Yeah, it really focuses on the human aspect, doesn't it? The suffering that it causes and the actual stories of the people involved rather than the monster. In a way, you could probably get away with not even showing the monster at all and it would still be a really good film.
But you want the money shot of the monster, though, don't you?
You want the money shot.
When it pokes its head over that hill, we all cheered.
Yeah, that is a great shot, actually.
Shall we do the quiz before we move on?
Yeah, let's do the quiz.
Trivia quiz.
Okay, question one. How many Toho films, Toho being the studio that made Godzilla, has Godzilla appeared in?
Ooh, okay.
It's quite a lot.
Yes, it is quite a lot. Now, I'm going to say 28.
Ooh, spot on.
It was 28. Okay, I wasn't sure if you meant... Because I read that figure, 28, but then I suddenly thought, is that 28 Godzilla films, and then does Godzilla make cameo appearances in other films? In a romantic comedy or something?
No, that you're spot on. It's 28 films. There are other kind of monster films made by Toho, but the ones that actually star Godzilla, 28.
Okay, well, great.
Well done.
Let's do them all.
Question two. What's the name of the weapon that Dr. Serizawa develops?
The Oxygen Destroyer.
That's right, yeah. Oxygen Destroyer.
Not the greatest name.
Okay, and question three. Name three other kaiju, being the Japanese monsters, that Godzilla has fought.
Three others?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You've got Mothra.
That's right, Mothra.
Bang. Is it Rodan?
Rodan, yeah.
Rodan.
Big pterodactyl thing.
Yeah. Mechagodzilla?
Mechagodzilla, yeah, that's right, that's okay, three. Great. I mean, there's loads of them. You could have King Ghidorah, Angu Rirus, I can't even say that. Batra, Hedera, Biollante. Biollante apparently is a cross between Godzilla and a rosebush.
Oh God.
Surprisingly scary, though. Destoroyah.
Destoroyah, yeah.
Destoroyah. Ebira, which is a giant prawn. Space Godzilla.
I saw Space Godzilla.
And the list goes on.
Excellent.
So that's 3 out of 3. Well done.
Hey, wow, brilliant. All right. Question one. Who starred in the American edited version of Godzilla? So when they re-edited the 1954 version, they added a US star.
US, good old US
star.
US of
A. Just to kind of pass comment on these crazy Japanese people. So who actually was it?
Raymond Burr, I think.
Yes, that's right. Perry Mason himself.
Yeah.
Raymond Burr starred there. I love the idea of just... I'll have to watch that again. We'll have to have some clips. Because I just imagine them having the sequence and just cut to Raymond Burr kind of looking on open eye again. Wow. And then cut back to the action and Godzilla's there.
He must have just basically been doing reaction shots for the entire...
Double takes. Perhaps looking at the monster and then... looking at the drink he was drinking and then throw it on the floor and shaking his head. Okay, question two. The film was inspired by King Kong and which 1953 US film?
The Beast from 20,000 Fathoms.
That's right, yes. I actually was surprised that this was Godzilla came after The Beast from 20,000 Fathoms.
Yeah.
I always assumed it was the other way around. I always assumed that The Beast from 20,000 Fathoms was inspired by Godzilla. So you get the US invented the giant monster genre.
Shh, keep it quiet.
I suppose they did with King Kong anyway, didn't they?
Yeah, it's true.
And finally, question three. History question for you, Lewis. The UN sent the monsters for their own safekeeping and for the world safekeeping to which place in 1968?
Okay.
During the Vietnam War.
Vietnam War. Was it Vietnam? I'm going to guess the moon.
The moon? Well, that is a good guess, but of course the monsters would die on the moon, Lewis.
Right.
It was actually Monsterland, or also known as Monster Island.
Of course. Of course. And whereabouts is Monster Island?
I think they have actually chosen a location for it, some islands near Japan.
Oh, right, okay.
I mean, why the Japanese are happy to have Monster Island so close to them, I don't know.
I hope they were offered economic incentives to keep the monsters so close.
My other backup question, which I think is quite a funny little bit, do you know the name of Godzilla's son?
Minizilla?
It is Minizilla. That really made me laugh.
Minizilla. It's very Austin Powers, isn't it?
Yeah. So, yeah, that's the interesting thing. You've got those kind of ridiculous later films, Minizilla, Space Godzilla, Mecha Godzilla, and all these kind of crazy over-the-top monsters. And what's so surprising is how serious this original film is.
Yeah, I was really surprised by that. It's quite actually moving in places. You know, there's some lines in it, though, where I was like, God, that's really... hard, you know. There's a bit, there's a woman cradling her two children as Godzilla attacks, saying, "Don't worry, soon we'll be with Father in heaven," you know. Yeah. I'm like, oh my God, this is hardcore stuff.
I think that's the most shocking thing, is Godzilla actually kills people.
Yeah.
And kills a lot of people.
A lot of people.
I don't think I've actually sat through the whole of 1998's American remake, but I certainly don't remember him really killing anyone. I'm sure he killed one or two, probably comedy people.
Well, yeah. I'm sure,
villains or something.
I think he squashed some people and stuff like that. But I mean, that film just focused basically on, there's a big monster destroying buildings and let's look at all this military hardware.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much it, really.
Whereas this is like a... this could be like the after effects. As you said earlier, it doesn't even almost have to be a monster. It's like the after effects of a terrible earthquake or typhoon or something like that. It's like a natural... it's treated as a natural disaster.
Exactly. There's lots of shots of hospitals afterwards, people caring for the sick and wounded, and people horribly burned
and radiation sickness. Yeah, there's a bit like... yeah, when you think about it, it's just a very cute kid sitting there as a doctor sort of runs a Geiger counter over them and it kind of shakes his head.
Oh, God.
You're like, oh, my God, this is horrific. Yeah, this is actually a terrible, devastating attack. This isn't just a silly monster.
Yeah, definitely. And it clearly is, you know, hearkening back to Hiroshima and Nagasaki, you know, the events there.
Yeah, well, there's that line, isn't there, just where people kind of find out about Godzilla.
Yeah, there's Godzilla's a bit on the tram, isn't
yeah,
there?
Just like some people just having a chat about the news.
The guy says, oh, I survived Nagasaki and now this or something.
Yeah,
like
you know, like, oh, yeah, I went through all that in Nagasaki to go through this again.
Yeah.
And it's not in a kind of like, this is the worst thing ever. It's almost like a world where we're like, unbelievable. Yeah. Yeah, that kind of way, wasn't it? It was treated as like, oh, here we go again.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of an odd sensation. It felt uncomfortable in places, the film, because it was so close, playing so close to home in terms of what actually happened in Japan.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously not giant monster attacks, but in terms of the actual destruction caused by the monster, the images of these destroyed cities on fire, it was very reminiscent of, you know, the pictures from the nuclear bomb.
Yeah.
And it's interesting as well, this film was made in 1954, which is the year that the American occupation of Japan ended.
Yes, of course.
And that was the first time that Japanese people could, you know, start commenting about, what actually happened during the war and like perhaps telling their side of the story.
Yeah.
Whereas before, a lot of that had been repressed or censored. This is kind of one of the first actual portrayals of the Japanese side of the story in a way.
Yeah.
There are lots of other films around that time that also came out that were quite almost jingoistic as well, but this one is actually...
Yeah.
Fairly even-handed, I think. It never mentions the US for a start.
That's very true. It is completely a Japanese story, and the Japan's reaction to it.
Mm.
Yeah, there's references to the self-defense force fighting the monster.
Yeah.
No kind of talk of like getting an international or UN mandated force.
Yeah, I think there's one.
Obviously,
point...
later on, the UN step in. I think it's called the United Nations Counter Godzilla Task Force.
That's right.
That was set up in the 60s.
Good. Well, it's good to know. It's not actually speaking of that though. It's interesting, you know, the counterbalance between this film and the later films, which are just more about the monster fighting other massive monsters.
Yeah.
Whereas this film is just really about the human impact. You know, there's a lot of shots of people kind of reacting to the monster and trying to work out what to do against the monster, and it's just really a human story more than anything else.
I mean, it makes sense that the later films did focus on that because it is such an iconic creature. The design is good, even though obviously it is just a man in a rubber suit, it has a certain power to it. And the sound, the roar is incredible. Yeah.
Yeah.
The roar is genuinely creepy.
It is. It really is.
The film opens. I mean, I think a couple of things work in the film's favour as well. The fact it's in black and white.
Mm.
Obviously, they didn't really have the money to spend to make it colour. Black and white film, one, it hides some of the weaknesses of the special effects. And two, when it opens, it really feels like almost like newsreel footage or something. Then when it opens, it's just like stark black and white and just the sound. You know, one, you've got this fantastic soundtrack and then the roar, that kind of like...
It's a really creepy... It's an amazing sound effect. Really, they hit the nail on the head first time. Apparently, they use that sound effect for every single Godzilla film that followed.
I think it's copyrighted.
They never changed the roar. Apparently, the guy made it. The original sound was he had a resin-coated glove. And he rubbed it down the strings of a double bass.
Right, okay.
And then slowed it down loads of times to get this kind of weird, kind of almost mechanical
sound. And it is. It really has an impact.
Mm.
Actually, talking about the music of the whole film, it's really good. A real fantastic soundtrack.
Yeah, I was really impressed with some of the kind of orchestral soundtracks to it.
Yeah.
Particularly the final scene, which is a very somber kind of, string kind of...
Oh, yeah. I mean,
part of the end.
You expect, looking kind of disaster films or monster films, that sort of thing, the end of the film is, as the monster's defeated, would be an exciting sound, like dangerous, trying to conjure feelings of danger and excitement before crescending in a triumphant note as the heroes win through.
Exactly.
And instead it's quite a sombre, slow, sad
end. Yeah. It really emphasises almost that killing this monster is a really awful thing, because it's, this amazing, unique thing that, there's probably only ever one in the world, and actually killing it is a crime, but it's the only thing they can do to stop more destruction. And also there's a note of self-sacrifice as well, so it's kind of, it's an odd ending, but it works really, really well, and it's better for it.
Well, yeah, even though the weapon used to destroy Godzilla is the slightly ridiculous sounding oxygen destroyer, which doesn't really make sense.
Yeah.
But, it's sort of presented as this a weapon that's even worse than nuclear weapons. And the fear is that this scientist, if he uses it, then that's going to be out there in the world, and that's going to make things even worse, make the world an even more dangerous place. So you may be taking down Godzilla, yet then you end up with weapons which are even more dangerous.
Yeah. Speaking of the oxygen destroyer, one scene that really worked very well for me was the bit where it's actually revealed for the first time, because it's revealed twice.
That's right. Well, you kind of see the scientists show the oxygen destroyer, the effects of it to the kind of...
Is it Emiko Yamane?
Who's that? It's very kind of almost 50, typical 50s setup. You've got a scientist, the scientist's daughter, and the kind of brash, handsome young man who's in love with the scientist's daughter.
That's right.
Those are kind of three main characters in the film. Yeah. And the scientist's daughter sees the effects, and you don't actually see what happens.
No,
it's not revealed what the actual oxygen destroyer is, or he doesn't even call it that. It just says, "I've invented this thing." She goes, and then that's it. And then a bit later, you actually see the effects when she's telling someone else about it.
Yeah, it's a really clever thing. I mean, it kind of builds your interest in, you know, what could this be, because you never actually see what the effects of what it does.
Yeah,
it's only later on that you realise, you know, how devastating it would be. So, I mean, it's a really nice... I've not seen that done before, I don't think. Not in that same kind of way.
No, definitely. And, I mean, as a whole, the film is very well directed. I think that's what surprised me. Yep. You've got to accept that, yeah, it's... The effects are not fantastic. But being in black and white... And I think some of the scenes where Godzilla attacks Tokyo, and you see the city on fire, and, yeah, obviously there is... some bits which are clearly just a model shot, but a couple of bits where you sort of see a long view of the city on fire and just the silhouette of Godzilla rampaging through the city are actually still have a certain power, still look quite good today.
Definitely. Yeah, there's a certain resonance there, isn't there? And God, it must have been incredibly dangerous to film that.
Oh yeah, well, the guy in the rubber suit, yeah.
Yeah, the poor guy in that suit. I mean, that suit, apparently it was so sweaty, you could only be in it 3 minutes at a time.
Yeah, I read it, it weighed like 200 pounds.
Oh, something like ridiculous.
Yeah, really heavy suit.
And he's there, like, next to fire, like real fire. Yeah. You're like, God, this is really dangerous.
A little bit later where he's kind of walking it back into the sea, and yeah, the fire is supposed to be jets attacking him, and it's obviously just fireworks being thrown at him.
Yeah,
and he's just kind of like trying to get back into the water.
And there's other bits where he's emerging from the water and you're thinking, he's in this really incredibly heavy suit coming out of the water. God, it must have been really,
I think it was actually a swimming pool that they had, and that's what the sea is.
Well done to that man.
Yeah, I mean, I think he carried on, he played Godzilla up until the 70s.
Well, I hope they improved the suit.
Yeah, it's like he's like the Dave Prowse of of Japan.
Yeah, so you mentioned Dr. Yamane a bit earlier, and I think
the key scientist.
I think he's a paleontologist, isn't he?
It's a little bit ambiguous of exactly what it is.
He's just a scientist.
Some things say he's an archaeologist, which doesn't make sense. I think he's supposed to be a paleontologist.
Yeah, that's it. So I think he's definitely my favourite actor in the film. I think he did a great performance. He's kind of a troubled man. He wants to preserve Godzilla. He doesn't want to kill it, but he's conflicted with everyone around him. Sees the destruction, and also he has a great opening sequence where he appears as the typical academic with his tie outside of his jacket.
Yeah, yeah.
Notices only starts adjusting himself later on and realizes
it looks a little bit messy.
A little bit messy. I mean, I think he was brilliant, really good. In fact, all the performances were definitely above what I'd expect for just a monster movie. I'm putting that in inverted commas.
Yeah. Well, I suppose the key thing to remember is that this, in a funny way. This was, because it's the first one, it's not considered a monster movie. You know, all the others, the 27 following films, were monster films and slightly over the top and silly, whereas this one wasn't a monster film. And it was a big film for its time.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it cost like $1 million to make, which is a huge amount in 1954.
Yeah, so it's a science fiction film, but they're taking it seriously. They're treating it as like, it's only perhaps later films, especially the ones in the 60s where Space Godzilla turns up and things like that, where perhaps they're, let's say the performances perhaps aren't as strong. So we said earlier the film was released in the States. I think it was in 1956. I think it was a couple of years after it was released in Japan. and it was an edited version. Mm. So they had Raymond Burr, Perry Mason there, just presumably smoking a cig and pointing at things. But perhaps one of the larger issues is they actually edited out all the references to nuclear weapons and atomic weapons. Nagasaki and things like that.
That seems very bizarre. How could you... The whole premise of the film is about nuclear weapons and testing, and that's how Godzilla got his powers, you know.
Well,
how do you explain the atomic breath?
Presumably, I don't know for certain, but I imagine they probably say it's nuclear testing that led the monster to awake the monster, for example.
Right, okay.
But I don't think they probably exercise the bits where the scientist is saying, this oxygen destroyer, I can't release it. We've already got so many terrible weapons like H-bombs in the world. Yeah, because obviously, there's two things there. One, the Americans tended to not downplay, but they didn't want perhaps people to realise, just to stop people from panicking again.
Yeah.
Let's say in a nice way, that they were frightened that people would panic if they thought too deeply about the fact that they were living now in a world with weapons that could cause so much devastation.
Mm.
And of course, the other thing is that Japan suffered, from, had two atomic weapons dropped on it by Americans.
Yeah.
Now, let's not get into the debate about the rights or wrongs of the use of those weapons during the Second World War. That's a much, much bigger debate than a silly podcast could cover. but certainly, I guess that's the impact. There was a thing of like, we don't really want to think about that.
No, that's true. But it seems so strange because the actual genesis of this film was based on a test in the Bikini Atoll just off the coast of Japan.
That's right, yeah. A weapon was tested, and they thought it was going to be a 6-megaton weapon, and it actually was like a 14-ton.
Yeah, like 14, 15 megatons, yeah.
And so the radius of the radiation, the actual explosion, was much, much larger than they thought it was going to be.
That's right.
So some Japanese fishermen were hurt, and...
Yeah, there was a fishing boat called the Lucky Dragon that was caught. It was 70 miles away from the blast, and even so, a lot of the people on it were burned. They suffered radiation sickness. Mm. One of them died a few months afterwards, and this caused a massive outroar in Japan, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
And the director of this film, Ishiro Honda, heard about the incident, and that was what directly inspired him to make Godzilla.
Well, the actual opening bit of Godzilla is a ship of fishermen or a transporter where... there is a kind of, when Godzilla's awaking, it's like a nuclear explosion. It's a massive bright flash of light.
Yeah.
Some people are blinded, it looks like, and burnt, and then the ship sinks.
Yeah, that's it.
And then a little bit later, some fishermen are actual fishermen who find the survivors. So, you can clearly see the influence of that incident on the film.
Yeah, which makes it seem all the stranger that they would take out those references in the American version.
Still, I suppose it did expose the character to the wider world, and which meant that in 1998 we got the American Godzilla.
Yeah, with Matthew Broderick.
Yeah, directed by, what's his name? By
Roland Emmerich.
Roland Emmerich.
Of Independence Day fame?
Independence Day, yeah. He and Stargate, that kind of thing. And obviously, Godzilla was a very conscious follow-up to Independence Day.
Yeah.
I remember after Independence Day came out, it's like, right, let's think of something else that can destroy big landmarks. but I think what we were saying earlier, the difference is that it's very much a children's film, that Godzilla, the American Godzilla. And it doesn't show the devastation of what a massive lizard rampaging through a city would be. In the open sequence of the Japanese Godzilla, Godzilla comes ashore to the island of,
Odo, I think?
Odo, Ido?
I think it's Odo.
And just sort of trashes through a sort of fishing village. And you see the effects of that. You see like people turn up and go through and look at the sort of destroyed houses, and there are families kind of lost. Yeah. And
well's been irradiated.
Yeah, and things like that. And it's really like, it seems a big event.
Mm.
In that 1998 one, doesn't Godzilla walk through a massive building, no one even notices until the next day, and things like that.
There's a bit where he hides, apparently. Godzilla hides in somewhere in Manhattan. Not quite sure how that's possible, seeing he's the size of a building.
But yeah, there's no sense of like, this has had a massive, New York is reeling from this terrible attack. One film that does is much more the spiritual successor to it is Cloverfield.
Yeah, definitely.
Which has its weaknesses, but I think it is much stronger in its the showing the actual impact on ordinary people.
Well, it focuses just on that core kind of, you know, people, those core number of characters who are just basically fleeing for their lives.
Yeah. You see, like, people trying to get across the bridge in Manhattan. Yeah, there is a sense of that. It's a horrible thing that's happening, and it's chaotic, and, yeah.
And it goes back to what I said earlier. Like, you don't really need to show the monster. You just need to show the effect. And in many ways, that's better than actually the actual shot of the monster itself.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I think all in all, we're going to recommend this film, aren't we?
Definitely, yeah. I was pleasantly surprised. I wasn't quite sure when you recommended it. I was like, oh, Godzilla, really? But actually, it's a really good film. Go and watch it if you can. Watch the Japanese version, though.
Yes, the Japanese version. Well, I myself picked up quite a good BFI DVD, which has got a nice little package. But I think it's just been re-released on Blu-ray as well, all tidied up. But definitely, yeah, check out that Japanese original. Right, okay, so before we finish, this week's secret sponsor.
Yeah, this week it's Hel Jones, recent follower on Twitter. She's at @miss_Mjolnir. I can never say that. Oh. Mjolnir. It's Thor's hammer.
Yes, that's right.
You know
right.
I mean,
yeah.
Thor's hammer, right?
You don't even do you pronounce the
Mjolnir?
J?
Mjolnir.
Hel will let us know. But she also has a blog, which is Filmic Philly. That's Filmic Philly.
That's good. It's very Terry Thomas, that, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Phil McPhilly, like a right Charlie.
So, yes, so check out her blog and follow her on Twitter. And, of course, you can follow us on Twitter, Wong Films, and follow and like our Facebook page. Over 50 likes now, so, but let's get it, let's keep them going. We're on our 51st podcast, let's have 51 likes.
Yeah, no, a million.
All right, million. Yeah, I forgot. Yeah.
We want a million. Yeah, that's it.
And if you have a film recommendation, where can they contact us, Lewis?
You can contact us at 101filmsyoushouldhaveseen@gmail.com and check out our blog at 101filmsyoushouldhaveseen.com.
Okay, so we'll speak to you maybe not next week, there might be a week's break. But if there is, we don't know yet.
We've got some films in mind though. We've got some corkers coming up.
We've got some great films coming up. So we might have a week off, but we will see you soon.
Bye.
Bye.
Whereas, like you said, later on, oh my god, this is why we don't record in the kitchen.
I guess so, yeah.
Oh god.